We rode until the sun touched the horizon. Thora, always at the front of the mavens, broke off from the road, taking a path to a nearby outcropping of rock with a cluster of sparse trees. Only when she swung off her horse did the rest of us bother to do the same. By nightfall, the roaring campfire was surrounded by saddles. Evie and I had taken Moses' place after he left the mavens in Middle. Five of the bedrolls were empty, the men having spread them out before riding out to hunt. While the days were scorching, the nights were cold. I folded our blanket in half, the bottom to keep us out of the sand, the top barely enough to keep us warm. "Not too far." She played with Faye's outside of the ring of saddles. Then I took a seat, brushing the cursed sand from my pants.
"You said your last name was Wolf?"
Jody spoke from his place across the fire. No matter which spot in the circle I chose, he was always in the spot directly across from mine, so that whenever I looked up, he was there. Taunting me seemed to be his new favorite hobby.
"Is that your husband's last name?"
"Yes."
"And what was your last name?"
"Why does it matter?" He shrugged.
"Call it curiosity. A woman who can pay 1,000 zillas for each of us should have a fairly recognizable last name."
"Shut up, Jody. Your voice is giving me a headache."
Thora was sharpening a knife.
"Besides, you already know her name. Stop tormenting the sparrow."
My jaw dropped. Jody grinned.
"Thora always ruins my fun."
"You knew? How?"
"The mavens make it their business to keep tabs on the happenings of each royal family. You're the only princess Odessa in Calandra. And if you weren't, Thora, you must have gone as a sparrow instead of your sister."
Well, she wasn't wrong. "Why didn't you say anything?"
"I don't give a damn who you are, princess. I'm after the Gold King's coin. I have a debt to settle, and he's gonna help me do it."
I was simply a means to an end. For the past 4 days, I'd convinced myself that I'd taken back some semblance of control, that I was no longer being manipulated by the Voster. I was even proud of myself for hiring the mavens and making it all the way to Lane in one piece. Except I was still just a pawn. Control was an illusion. Thora would use me for her own gain. Fair enough. I was using her too. All I cared about was getting Evie to Quintus and finding ransom. Jody crossed his arms over his chest, his gaze shifting past my shoulder to where Evie was still playing with FaZe. The cunning gleam in his eyes was enough to make my stomach drop.
"You weren't much of a mystery, but I still haven't figured out who the girl is yet."
"Mine." I reached for the sword at my side, lifting it into my lap. Jody could pester and annoy me to his heart's content, but if he so much as looked at Evie the wrong way, I'd drive this blade through his heart.
"I like her."
"Any other questions, Jody?"
"Not tonight, though."
He dipped his chin, then pushed to his feet, dusting his hands on his pants.
"I'm going."
Before he could finish, the thunder of horses bounced off the rock, and the five mavens who'd gone hunting stormed into camp. Goldin came into the light first with a dead creature in his grip. He tossed it at Thora's feet. Thora sat taller, frowning at the dead beast.
"I'm not skinning that."
"We're not eating that."
Goldin fisted his hands on his hips. I straightened, eyes wide as I took in the monster. A caverine. They were nocturnal animals who lived in Lane's sand dunes and could see almost perfectly at night. Its body was covered in thick brown and black fur, and its teeth and fangs and claws were snow white. So were the two spiraling horns that extended from the creature's skull. Their dung was called corican. When boiled to mush and reduced to a paste, it was the strongest hallucinogen in Calandra. It was another ingredient in Luella's elixir that had led to the creation of Lysa.
"We killed this one and another."
The other mavens joined the circle.
"We'll need to keep watch tonight in case there are more."
"Evie, come here." I waved her back toward the fire. She scooped up FaZe and came running.
"A caverine isn't going to come near a fire."
Goldin flipped the monster over, revealing a cut that traveled the length of the monster's belly. It seeped green, putrid blood. Lysa. The caverine's eyes should have been yellow, but even in the dim light, I could see the milky white tinge. Dare, a tall and lanky man with shaggy blonde hair, came to stand beside Goldin.
"Are you all right?"
Goldin nodded, bending to inspect the tattered remains of a pant leg. The leather was shredded and coated in blood. Red blood. He snatched Thor's knife and sliced away the fabric. His calf was covered in claw marks.
It came at me in the dark. Left a few gashes on my horse, too.
Caverine or vicious?
Nothing like this.
Dearn marched to his saddle to retrieve a healing kit.
The other one was just as bloodthirsty. I cut off its horns and a leg with my axe, still kept coming.
My gaze was locked on Golding's legs. Did it bite you? Everyone's attention swung to me at once. Thora shifted to her knees, standing slowly.
Why do you ask?
Did it bite you?
No.
Good.
All right, princess.
Thora crossed her arms over her chest.
What do you know?
Maybe this was a story I shouldn't share. Ransom had always kept Lysa a secret because he'd feared it would only cause a panic. But people should panic about this and the migration. Besides, there was a very real chance the Mavens wouldn't believe me anyway. I swallowed hard. It's an infection, and it's called Lysa.
Kespia.
Andreas slipped his arm behind my shoulders.
Are you all right? You've been quiet today.
Yes, just tired. Tired of last moon's vision running through my mind on a loop. Bodies litter a courtyard walled by towering logs. Fires rage all around me. Smoke billowing like clouds. A chorus of growls and clicks mingles with harrowing screams. Sandra! Tears stream down my face as I watch. This is not my cousin. This is not a starling. Andreas's lifeless body lies at my feet. His throat is missing. The ring I gave him during our wedding glows in the firelight. I close my eyes as death snarls. And let the divine call me home. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw his dead body. I burrowed into Andreas's side, willing the image of his death out of my mind as I stared at the fire he'd built for camp. We were curled against a fallen log, our legs extended and covered by a blanket to ward off the cold. It was dark, the two moons obscured by a thick layer of clouds, dark enough to hide the tears swimming in my eyes. What did that vision mean? Never in my life had a vision been about me, and never in my life had I seen a glimpse of the future. It was always the past. Always events that had already taken place for other people. It wasn't a dream. It had the same crisp, clear edges as a vision. The same lasting image that I'd remember until the end.
You're shivering.
Andreas pulled the blanket higher. My entire body trembled, but it had nothing to do with the stormy weather. It's cold tonight.
The seasons are changing. It'll be winter soon.
Winter? I didn't understand that word.
The coldest of the four seasons. Summer, spring, winter, fall.
We don't have winter in Nelfenix.
It's not my favorite, but I love spring in Quentis. It's beautiful, lush and green and bright. You'll see when I take you there.
Would he? If we kept going on this path, traveling to Tura, would Andreas survive? Or was this vision a gift from the divine? This could be a warning that I was on the wrong path. What if I found Xandra, but rather than me saving her life, she took ours instead? Another shiver ran through my bones. We'd been traveling across Calandra, and though the suns had been long and grueling, they were worth it for the moons we'd slept beneath the stars. Except there were no stars. Was that another omen of the death that awaited us at this journey's end? We'd followed the road through the forests of Genesis to Coroness, the capital situated at the base of the Elrus Mountains. The city was a cluster of buildings with tall, pointed roofs. From red to blue to yellow to green, each structure was painted a bold hue. Even some of the city's stone streets were stained with color. Coroness was a place I could have explored for summers, but we'd only taken one moon's rest at an inn on the outskirts of the city, before buying two horses and leaving the capital behind. But it had been nice to see that there were cities in Calandra. It was still unsettling how much open space there was between towns. How few people lived on this continent. Or maybe they simply resided in other places, like Quintus. We'd ridden north, traveling along the foothills until we crossed into Lane. So far, this country seemed as sparsely populated as Genesis. It was so different from Ken and Nelfinix. Trees had given way to barren rock. It wasn't exactly like the landscape in Sho, but it was similar enough to make me homesick. When I'd asked Andreas why there weren't more towns, he told me that people tended to cluster in cities, where they'd be safer from monsters. We had yet to see another monster since the Fennec. And while Andreas had gone to buy our two mounts and coroness, I'd asked the innkeeper if he knew of a silver-eyed warrior. He'd asked me, in turn, if I was drunk. Andreas lifted his hand to my face, dragging his knuckles along my cheekbone, stealing me away from my thoughts.
Tell me about your family.
I have two sisters, Emery and Saskia.
And your parents?
My father died 5 loons before I was born. Emery and Saskia remembered him enough to tell me stories. He'd been the captain of the Royal Blades, nearly 20 summers older than our mother. He died in his sleep one moon. And my mother is gone. She left us when I was a baby. We were raised by my aunt.
Ah.
Do you have sisters?
Only a brother, Eric.
Do you get along?
Nelvio.
Andreas used the old language when he was finished with a topic. I tilted up my chin and forced a smile.
I'm ready for a real bed.
So am I. Maybe we'll spend an extra day or two in Scansion when we get there. There's an inn I've stayed at before with the best clam stew you'll ever taste. And each room comes with a bathtub large enough for two.
I snuggled closer. Every moon, Andreas would kiss me until I was dizzy. But before it went any further, he'd pull away. In Coroness, he'd gotten us separate rooms at the inn. I hoped the mention of a bathtub meant we'd be sharing a room and a bed once we arrived in Scansion.
You've traveled often, haven't you?
I have. Once I came of age, my father felt it was important for me to see as much of Calandra as possible. My family's wealthy, and I was fortunate that they could afford to let me explore the realm.
You're wealthy?
I sat up, trying to match this new piece of information to the man who was stealing my heart.
Yes. Does that change how you see me?
No. Rich or poor, he was still Andreas.
Why were you in that little cabin?
To prove to myself I could walk away.
Walk away from what?
The wealth. My father. We are not on the best of terms. I haven't spoken to him in a year, not since I left Quintus. I wanted to live a lifestyle that he'd loathe, so I chose a place I'd never been. The cabin belonged to a man from Clefton. I met him a long time ago when I was just a boy. He offered to sell it to me. I accepted.
Will you miss it?
Yes. It served its purpose. I'll come back to visit someday, but I won't live there again. I can't avoid Quintus forever.
What's it like?
I curled back into his side.
Quintus?
He toyed with a strand of my hair, twining the lock around his finger.
There's an openness to the countryside. Fields of wheat and grain that make a man feel small. It's like being on a ship in the middle of a golden sea. My favorite cities are on the coast, where you can hear the ocean waves from every open window, where it smells like salt and sand and every spice imaginable.
Like Sho. The way Andreas talked about Quintus, with affection and adoration in every word, was the way I felt about my home. Maybe I'd find a piece of my Nelfinix here in Calandra, enough to fill the void in my heart, in case I never returned.
You miss it.
Every day.
I miss my home, too.
Nelfinix?
He spoke the name often, always with a curious lilt in his voice. Anytime I told him of my country, he soaked in every word. For all he knew, it could be a string of lies. But there was never any doubt. Never a question that I was telling him a tale. His trust was as beautiful as his smile. The guilt of keeping the truth from Andreas had started to gnaw at my insides. He was risking his life to take me across this continent, and he didn't know why.
There is something I haven't told you.
His body stiffened.
Xandra and I came to Calandra to avenge my sister's death.
What?
He looked down at me, forehead furrowed. I shied away from his warmth and told him my truths. My aunt is the queen of Nelfenix. His eyebrows lifted.
You're royalty?
Yes, I am Starling.
What does that mean?
It means I'm a Nelfenix princess. As for the rest of what being Starling entailed, well, that was for another son. My family and our bloodline have many traditions.
Your rites?
Yes, we call it a ritus. And another we hold dear is vengeance. To kill a Starling is a death sentence. I believe my sister Emery's murderer is here in Calandra. A warrior with silver eyes. And I believe he is in Tura. Andreas's jaw clenched as he turned his attention to the fire, his gaze fixed on the crackling flames.
That's why you're going there. Not to explore and find your cousin.
I do want to find my cousin. And also the silver-eyed warrior.
Why didn't you tell me this at the cabin?
I was leaving, and I didn't think I'd see you again.
Then what about all this time together?
He flung the blanket off his legs, pacing in front of the fire.
You've had days to tell me the truth, Caspia.
I'm sorry. It wasn't a secret intended to hurt you. I sat on my knees and closed my eyes. I was afraid you wouldn't believe me.
That you're here for vengeance? You might be from Nelfenix, but that is a concept we have in Calandra, too.
I gave him a sad smile. No, I was afraid you wouldn't believe how I know Emery was killed by a silver-eyed man, and how I know it was in Tura. He stopped pacing, crossing his arms over his chest. I don't have dreams, Andreas. I have visions. He blinked, then came to sit on the log, and listened as I told him about my sister's death. I learned enough about Andreas's expressions to know that clench in his jaw and intensity in his tawny eyes meant he was surprised. And Andreas was not a man who enjoyed a surprise. He'd been quiet as I told him about my visions of Emery being killed by the silver-eyed warrior, and how I knew they were not dreams, but glimpses of the past. It was strange how something that had haunted me for so long hadn't taken long to explain. It felt bigger than mere moments. Probably because I'd left out a few details. I hadn't told him that she'd been in a Swift's form when she died.
I would give all the Elfalter in the world to know what you're thinking.
Elfalter?
I fished my necklace from beneath my tunic, letting the orange metal glint in the firelight.
You have gold in Calandra. We have Elfalter in Nelfenix. It's the purest and cleanest of all metals. It's impossibly strong, yet it can be molded under exactly the right conditions. It's as precious to us as any gem or jewel.
Andreas studied the pendant, taking it from my hand and turning it to inspect the silver wing.
What is this symbol?
The crest of the Starling.
He studied it closely before setting it against my chest. His eyes searched mine, his amber starbursts glowing. His expression was still too serious, too contemplative.
Do you believe me?
I wouldn't blame him if he didn't. But it would be the end of us. I wasn't ready for the end.
Yes.
For a heartbeat, I thought I'd imagined the word.
You do?
Andreas shifted off the log, kneeling in front of me. He took my face in his hands, his thumbs dragging over my cheeks.
I believe you.
Why?
He bent and kissed the corner of my mouth.
Are you lying?
No.
Then I believe you.
I'd never had such faith from another person. Even Emery. Even Xandra. Tears filled my eyes. Divine. I was tired of crying.
Vex.
I blinked them away. Andreas caught one that escaped.
Vex?
Oh, it's just a curse.
He thought about it for a moment, then grinned.
Here we say, fuck.
I like your version better.
So do I.
He sealed his mouth over mine, his tongue dragging over the seam of my lips, as he slid inside, slanting for a deeper taste. His hands moved from my face into my hair. They skimmed over my shoulders and down my spine, settling on the curve of my ass. He
He tore his mouth away.
Don't stop.
I fisted his shirt.
Kespia, there are things...
He dropped his forehead to mine.
What?
He eased away.
Nothing.
I let the lie stand. He wasn't the only one at this campfire with secrets. Sooner rather than later, I'd have to tell him what it meant to be Starling. But not yet.
Do you want me?
More than anything in this realm.
I urged him backward until he was resting against the log. Then I crawled to straddle his hips, taking his face in my hands.
Then I'm yours.
You are mine, darling.
The endearment made my belly flutter. I freed the clasp on his pants as I pressed my lips to his, and as we stripped each other bare beneath a blanket of stars, as our bodies became one, I let my other secrets get lost in the dark.
For 2 days, I'd answered countless questions about Lysa, most 3 or 4 times. Where Thora had mostly avoided me after the cave ginger bogs, she was my constant companion now, riding at my side as we traveled through Lane toward Genesis. From sunrise to sunset, as the mountains on the horizon grew larger, she'd interrogate me for information. My father would undoubtedly reprimand me for being so forthcoming with a woman whose allegiances were entirely unknown, but I had a feeling even the Gold King would find Thora intimidating. I couldn't have ignored her questions if I'd tried. I'd told her about each of my encounters with an infected monster, from the Marrow Eel on the Crescent Crossing, to the pack of werewolves wreaking havoc on the Turin people, to the Tarkin mother that had abandoned her cubs. And I'd told her about the Guardians' hunting parties and their futile effort to purge their kingdom of the infection. Thor knew everything I was willing to share. But she didn't know that the Guardian, the Crown Prince, and my husband were all one and the same. She didn't know that Evie was King Ramsay's daughter. And she didn't know that Luella was responsible for the very elixir that had contributed to the infection. I still believed Luella's intentions had been pure. She'd set out to create a medicine to protect her children, to make them stronger. If Ransom hadn't been bitten by that werewolf, she would have succeeded.
I'm not sure if I believe you about the migration, but I do believe you're telling the truth about Lysa.
Thanks? That might be the closest thing she'd ever given me to a compliment. I'd take it. Thora held up a hand and slowed her horse. I did the same as she brought her fingers to her lips. The mavens circled around us, their expressions stern.
Jody, Matthias, Golding, and Dare with me. The rest, you have your orders.
Orders? What orders? My eyes widened as one by one the mavens scattered, leaving only 6 horses on the road. Where are they going? They're coming back, right?
No, they have another task. Though I expect your father to pay their 1,000 zillas as if they'd escorted you to Quintus. It's not their fault the Torrens have been concealing a plague.
Damn. I really like the idea of traveling with 11 warriors, not 5.
Don't look so worried, doll. We'll keep you safe.
Let's go.
Thora jerked her chin toward the road and the mountains in the distance.
I want to get to the edge of the skeleton forest before dark.
What in the shades was a skeleton forest? I swallowed that question as we took off riding. Thora took the lead, riding alone. Apparently, her interrogation was finished. Jody and Matthias went behind her while Evie and I followed with Golding and Dare watching our backs. It was nearly dark when we crossed the invisible border of Lane into Genesis. Thora led us toward a towering formation of rocks with a split down the middle, the opening creating a cave. There was already a fire ring in its center and a stack of branches left behind. We weren't the first to spend a dark night in this place, and I doubted we'd be the last. Our campfire circle was considerably smaller with only 6 saddles, but at least we had shelter. Thora and Matthias sat to my right, Golding and Dare to my left, their bedrolls touching, and Jody across the fire. Always watching, always smirking. Faye sat beside me, gnawing on a piece of dried meat. Evie was asleep and curled into my side, her body shivering. Each night seemed to get colder than the last.
Here, use this. Dare and I will share.
Golding tossed me a thick pelt, a ruby red pelt with pink stripes, a Tarkin pelt. These pelts were prized among the rich, but I doubted Goldin had paid the lofty price to buy this hide. No, he'd likely killed a monster and skinned it himself. It took everything I had to spread the fur blanket out over my lap and cover Evie. In the morning, I'd make sure it was folded and returned to Goldin before she woke up. Thank you. Dare laughed at something in the book he was reading. He leaned closer to Goldin, holding out the page. The two bent their heads together, sharing an intimate smile, and then Dare put the book aside and rested his cheek on Goldine's shoulder. I hadn't realized they were a couple. Every other night, they'd kept their distance, sleeping on opposite sides of the camp circle. Except now the other mavens were gone, and maybe this meant they no longer had to hide.
It's forbidden.
Thora's gaze locked on the fire, reading my thoughts.
When we join the mavens, we vow to give up all ties. Past, present, and future. But some bonds cannot be broken or ignored.
The night I told the mavens about the migration, one of the men, Mose, had left to warn his family. He'd said, to hell with the rules. What are the mavens?
Mercenaries, doll.
I had a hunch that name was simply part of their illusion, intended to keep people at a distance. Who are you really?
Shackled.
Matthias ran a hand over his auburn hair. To who? A king? The Voster? Salem? Jody's mouth flattened.
If you know what's good for you, you'll forget that name, and you'll never speak of what you're told or what you see tonight.
Meaning I'd never tell anyone about Goldin and Dare.
Salem gives incentives for keeping one another on the path.
You mean the other mavens would tell him about your relationship?
Yes, if it meant their own debt was lessened.
Oh, so much for loyalty among companions. I couldn't imagine any of Ransom's rangers betraying the trust they had with one another. Tillian knew Xavier wasn't truly the crown prince, and that was a secret she would be willing to take to the grave. Who is Salem? Jody stretched out his long legs, crossing his ankles as he laced his hands behind his head.
Our employer, for all intents and purposes. We are each indebted to his service. And until that debt is paid, we are his to command.
What does he make you do?
Whatever his black heart desires, the bastard.
You hurt people for him?
You really are naive, aren't you, princess?
I guess so. Matthias cleared his throat.
I've been with the mavens since I was 14. My mother worked at a brothel. She had the misfortune of servicing Salem one night and fell pregnant. He isn't the fatherly type. So he went to kill my mother before the baby was born. I stopped him from cutting open her womb, begged him to spare her life. He agreed, but only if I paid him 1,000 zillas. I don't even have a Derek to my name, but he offered me a deal for repayment. I earned this star tattooed on my face and have been in his servitude since.
I'm sorry. Matthias shrugged.
It's not all bad. He uses my mother and sister to keep me in line, which means it got her out of that brothel. I don't see them often, but whenever he threatens to kill them, at least I know they're still alive.
And from time to time, Golding and I have nights like this. Nights when we don't have to pretend.
They might not have had loyalty and secrecy from all the mavens, but they did from Jody, Matthias, and Thora.
We all have our own stories, but you get the idea.
Do you owe 1,000 zillas too?
Two.
He traced the arches over his nose. Does this mean that once you receive the payment from my father, you'll be free? The sound was so loud it made Faye sit up straight.
Salem takes a cut. You give us 1,000 zillas, we'll be fortunate to see even half of that.
Enough talk of Salem.
Goldin kissed Dare's temple, then leaned back against his saddle and closed his eyes. Salem had no intention of letting them go, did he? And I suspect that if he found out about Dare and Goldine's relationship, they'd each earn another star on their face. Jody had 3. Thora, 5. In the journal, I'd read that she abandoned her armor and leather in the desert. Did that mean someday she'd be free of the mavens? Did that story have anything to do with Brother Skor telling me to find a warrior? Do you know any of the Voster? Thora turned to stare at me, her persimmon starburst glowing in the firelight.
Never speak of the Brotherhood in my presence again.
So, yes. She stood and, without a word, stalked out of the cave. Dare went back to reading as Jody kept on smirking. Gods, I was tired of the constant attention, of the staring and scrutiny. What?
How do you like that pelt? I assume you know it's Tarkin.
I ground my teeth together so hard my jaw hurt. Why couldn't he have been one of the mavens to leave?
You can't keep him.
I reached for Faze, stroking the soft fur between his ruby ears as he kept chewing on the meat. It's not your concern.
If it's for the girl's sake, she'll only get more attached. And like it or not, doll, he's a monster. Get rid of him before he does something you can't undo.
Jody was wrong. There was more to Faze than claws and fangs. He wasn't a mindless beast, dominated by the instinct to hunt and kill. There was magic in my little monster. Magic in the comfort and love he gave to Evie. Magic in the way he seemed to understand my moods and emotions. Faze could have escaped into the wilderness countless times on this journey, but he'd stayed, tucked and squished in his carrier as our companion. I don't expect you to understand. And like I said, it's none of your concern. Faze's ear turned, and he straightened, his meal forgotten. Jody opened his mouth, ready to wield his sharp tongue, but before he could speak, a faint sound came from the distance. A series of clicks. My heart stopped. Bear wolves. Jody pressed a finger to his mouth, standing as Dare nudged Golding, and then the pair of them did the same. Matthias picked up his bow and quiver of arrows. I reached for my sword, hand trembling as I shifted out from under the pelt and got to my feet. We stood, motionless, ears trained to the night, but the clicks never came again.
You heard that too, right?
Dare and Golding both nodded. A moment later, Thora stepped into the cave, returning from the forest. Her expression was stone, her eyes hard.
Beowulfs?
I fucking hate Genesis. This god's damn kingdom is crawling with wolves.
She snatched her axe from beside her saddle.
I can't tell how many. They're too far away. Stay close to the fire. Let's see if we can't bring the horses inside.
I gulped as Golding, Dare, and Matthias followed her out of the cave. The fire might keep a normal monster away, but if these wolves had Lysa, not even the flames would scare them off. I signed the eight and sank down beside Evie.
Don't worry, doll. You're safe.
No, we weren't. I closed my eyes and traced the scar on my palm. And as Evie slept, I spent the night praying that Ransom would find us. Before it was too late.
The world was bathed in blood. Xandra's roar rattled the fortress walls. A mother wept over her slaughtered child. A man tried to push his guts back inside his body, dropping to his knees as they all spilled free. Everywhere I turned, there was another Beowulf. Xandra commanded them like an army of death. She was a monster. Her fangs dripped with Andreas's blood. I looked to his lifeless body at my feet and welcomed the divine's embrace. I woke with tears swimming in my eyes. It took a moment for me to remember where I was sleeping. Ozarth, Scansion, a suite at Andreas's favorite inn. We'd spent so many moons beneath the stars that the gauze sheeting around this bed was almost suffocating. Even though I could see the rest of the room through the sheer fabric, it still felt too much like walls. There was a reason our palace windows and show had no glass panes to keep out the elements. Those of the Starling bloodline did not like to feel caged. A sheen of sweat covered my face, the bed sheets sticky against my skin. Andreas's arm was draped over my hips as he slept soundly on his stomach. He seemed so at peace, so utterly handsome and relaxed. It never took him long to fall asleep. He'd pull me close and bury his face in my hair. Then before I could count to 10, he'd have already dozed off. I envied him that. The more often I had the vision of his death, the more I feared sleep. It had come 6 times. I loathed the number 6. The details became clearer and clearer as the vision repeated. His hair was shorter when he died, cut above his ears. There was a thin scar on his chin. His gold wedding ring was inlaid with amber jewels, the same color as the starbursts in his eyes. Where had he gotten that scar? How long had he worn that ring? Were we happy before that gruesome end? I slipped out from beneath his arm, careful not to wake him, as I climbed out of the bed and pushed beyond the canopy. The robe I'd worn after our bath last moon was draped on a chair. I pulled it on, tying the sash around my waist as I tiptoed from the bedroom. The inn's emblem, twin crescent moons faced together to form an elongated circle, was laid in the sitting room's floor with emerald tiles. Two navy velvet chairs sat opposite a plush sofa made of the same fabric. The air smelled like orange peel and rose. A pitcher of fresh water sat on the small writing desk beside a new bouquet of burgundy mums. The sheer white curtains floated from the breeze that drifted in from our balcony. I stepped onto the platform, holding tight to the wooden rail, and breathed in the cool air of dawn as tears pricked the corners of my eyes. Fuck. I dabbed them away. Even when I was alone, I found myself using calandrin more often than not. If I stayed here long enough, would I forget Nelfinix? If I left here now, if I found a way to sail home, would it change the future? How did I save him? I pressed my palms to my eyes, pushing in so hard that white and black spots blanked out everything but the sounds of the city. We'd been in Scansion for 4 suns. Each morning, Andreas would ask if I was ready to continue our journey on to Tura. And each morning, I'd kiss his mouth and drag him back to bed, where we'd stay, naked and entwined, for hours and hours. How could I continue to Tura when it might mean his death? There was a clarity to this vision. It was sharper than any other. The only vision I'd seen with this much focus was Emery's death. If it was repeating, it had to mean something. But what? I gripped the balcony's rail, digging my nails into the wood. It reminded me of the suns aboard the Serena when I'd stood at the bow and done the same. Even this morning, with my head spinning, the floor seemed to tilt below my feet, like I was aboard the ship again. What would Zandra do? I wished I could ask her. The bed rustled inside, the sound so faint it was something I shouldn't have been able to hear. Footsteps shuffled across the floor before Andreas walked onto the balcony, a white sheet wrapped around his waist. 2 strong arms enveloped me as he molded his body around mine.
You're not sleeping enough.
Sleep was a dangerous concept at the moment. I'll rest later. He held me tighter, his body keeping me warm.
Is it always this cold in Ozarth?
Now that the fear from the vision was fading, the chill of the morning was sinking in, raising bumps on my arms and legs.
If you think this is cold, we'll need to get you warmer clothes before we travel to Tura. It will only get colder until we reach the winter solstice. There might already be snow in the mountains.
Snow? What is snow?
Like sand, but made of ice. It falls from the sky, like white rain.
The vision I had loons ago of the man riding a horse with that young girl. They'd been in a field beside mountains capped in white. I'd thought it was sand or stone, but it was snow.
There is no snow in Nelfinix.
No seasons. The suns were almost always the same. We had times when it would rain from dawn to dusk, and while the storms carried a chill, when the clouds parted, the warmth would return as though it had never left. A cart rolled through the narrow alleyway beneath our balcony, the driver urging on his horse. Andreas and I hadn't spent much time beyond the walls of this room. All I'd seen of Scansion had been the road through the city that led us to the Emerald Crescent Inn. Since we arrived, each meal had been delivered to our sitting room, and if we longed for anything, Andreas would simply go downstairs, gold coins in hand, to make our request to the clerk.
Do you want to leave today?
No. I rested the back of my head against his chest. Not yet.
Then I want to show you the city. But first, come back to bed.
He bent to press his mouth to the juncture of my neck and shoulder. The kiss was feather light and sent tingles down my body, desire pooling in my core. He lifted me off my feet and carried me inside, parting the canopy to lay me down on the mattress. I slid my hand down his rippled stomach as he crushed his mouth to mine, our tongues tangling as I untied the sheet from his waist. He settled into the cradle of my hips, his weight pinning me to the bed as he kissed me until I was breathless. I reached between us and took his length in my fist, lining him up at my entrance. He rocked us together, slowly, torturously, until he was rooted deep.
Yes!
The stretch of my body around his made my toes curl. I arched into him, my pebbled nipples dragging along his hard chest. Andreas tore his mouth away, kissing a trail along the line of my jaw until he reached my ear.
Shades, I love to fuck you.
Fuck, I was learning, had many meanings, but this was my favorite. I hooked my ankles around his hips and dug my fingers into the hard muscles of his shoulders as he eased out, then thrust inside. He hit the spot that made me melt. His strokes were quick but deliberate. His hands roamed with intent, leaving sparks in their wake as they moved over my breasts and ribs and thighs. He stared down at me with enough desire to make me come undone. And when he pressed his finger to my center, I shattered, my body breaking into a thousand brilliant pieces. The chill of the morning was long gone by the time we collapsed, boneless, onto the bed. Our legs twined and his body curled around mine. Andreas fell asleep instantly, a soft smile on his lips. I stared at him, memorizing every part of his face, from the sharp corners of his jaw to his strong chin and the dark crescents of his eyelashes, until my own fluttered closed. The vision came immediately. This time, I saw the broad sword in the dirt at his side. I saw the crest on his silver armor, a crossbow woven with leaves and stalks of wheat. I saw the gore and blood from where his throat had been torn open by jaws. I woke in time to slap a hand over my mouth to keep from retching on the sheets. The streets of Scansion were made of gray stones, and every road seemed to lead to a bridge. The city was built at the mouth of the Harrow River, where the water flowed into the Crescent. Instead of a single, wide channel, the water broke off into countless tributaries, like the branches of a willow tree. The larger channels were full of boats and ferries, shuttling goods up and downstream. The smaller streams gave people a place to wash clothes or cast a fishing line. The water was as blue as the Ozarth flags hung from balconies and posts, as blue as the starbursts in the countless gazes we'd passed since Andreas and I left the inn to explore. We'd wound through a neighborhood of homes, made with the same gray stone as the streets. Each had a roof covered in metal spikes, and above those spikes was a grid of iron bars that were mounted on posts driven into the ground. It was strange architecture. But most of the grids had certain squares filled with a colored film that cast the homes beneath them in hues of soft blue or green or pink. Maybe the bars were Calandrin art, like the sculptures and fountains in show. We walked at a leisurely pace to a nearby market, exploring the stalls and carts. Andreas's fingers stayed threaded through mine as we peered into shop windows and perused display tables. Every other merchant was selling some sort of weapon. Swords and knives and blades, every shape and size imaginable. I hadn't seen so many blades since I left show. My hands itched to touch them all.
Is it dangerous in Scansion?
No more than most other cities. Ozarth is known for their iron mines. It's heavily traded with other kingdoms. Lumber from Tura, spices and gold from Lane, oil from Genesis, grains and livestock from Quentis. Most of the iron mined here is sent raw, but some of the finest blacksmiths in Calandra live in Ozarth. They craft weapons and bring them here to sell.
Ah.
Would you like one?
He gestured to a table covered with a plum velvet cloth and an assortment of swords and knives.
Take your pick.
It was easy. I chose a kukri to replace the one I'd lost in Genesis. The pommel was inlaid with a gleaming amber jewel that reminded me of Andreas's eyes. The grip molded perfectly to my palm,
and the silver crossguard was etched with swirls and lines that reminded me of waves. With the weapons secured across my back, we kept winding our way through the streets, moving into the area of the market where the tables were crowded with fruits and vegetables. Andreas stood head and shoulders above most. His height seemed to intimidate people in the market, and wherever we walked, they moved out of his way. Or maybe it was simply his commanding presence that sent them scurrying to clear a path. His confidence was catching, and for the first time in a long time, I felt like the princess I'd been in show, the woman who held her head high. We came to a congested area that smelled of flour and spices and yeast. When I spotted a baker's cart, my stomach growled. The clam stew we'd eaten for our noontime meal was delicious, but I was hungry again. Can we buy a loaf of that bread? I pointed to the cart.
Of course.
He dropped a kiss to the top of my hair. The baker smiled as we approached, waving a hand to his offerings. I opened my mouth, about to ask for a loaf with a leaf design in its crust. A yelp came from Andreas's side. He dragged a boy with olive skin and straight black hair out from behind us, keeping hold of the child's arm. The boy, possibly around Graciela's age of 6 summers, thrashed and pulled against Andreas's grip.
Stop!
The child obeyed. He blew the hair from his dark eyes. Then he glared up at his captor, his blue starbursts flashing.
Let me go!
Andreas arched an eyebrow as he dropped to a crouch in front of the boy.
Give me back my coin purse.
What coin purse?
The corner of Andreas's mouth twitched.
You're a good little cut purse, but not good enough.
Andreas plucked his teal coin purse from where the boy had stuffed it in the back of his pants. Then he looked up to the baker.
2 loaves, please.
The baker gave him a sideways glance, but picked out 2 loaves, wrapping each in a thin cloth, before handing them to me.
2 derricks.
Andreas fished 2 small coins from his purse and handed them to the baker. Then, still holding the child's arm, he took a loaf of bread from me.
One day you will steal from a man who won't be kind when you're caught. Quit stealing before that day comes.
The boy's eyes bounced between Andreas and the loaf. Then he seemed to notice me watching. He met my gaze and shied away, like he was scared for the first time. With a quick swipe, he took the loaf from Andreas, who finally let him go. The child scampered off, hugging the bread to his chest as he disappeared into the crowd. Gone, until I blinked and saw him again. The boy whips open the flap of a tent. The fabric is so dirty and faded, it is impossible to discern its true color. Tan or cream or white. The sun is setting. The sky alight with pink and yellow and pale blue. He glances over his shoulder, making sure he is alone, before slipping into the tent. Once the flap is closed, he sits on a pallet in the center of the cramped space. His tattered blanket is a discarded Ozarth flag from the marketplace. He plops down on his makeshift bed, taking a bite from his loaf, chewing as he sits alone in the near darkness. He signs the 8. Circling a hand from his forehead to his heart and back. When the tent opens again, a flash of light illuminates the dusty, cramped space. The boy takes a bite so large his cheeks bulge. Crumbs escape his lips. He chews with ferocity, trying to hide the bread behind his body, swallowing too soon. He chokes. The larger child who burst into the tent rips the bread from the boy's hand. The tent flap opens again, closes again. And the boy, empty-handed, hugs his knees to his chest as tears fill his eyes.
Caspia.
Andreas shook me by the shoulders. I snapped out of the vision with a gasp.
Are you all right?
His hands came to my cheeks, tilting my head back as his gaze roved my face.
What happened? You were staring off at nothing. I kept saying your name, but you were...
lost in a tent somewhere in this city. Where a starving child needed another loaf of bread.
We must find that boy.
I took his hand and pulled him in the direction that the child had run.
Caspia, what is...
Please!
I kept pulling, my grip on his hand tightening.
If we hurry, maybe we can catch him.
Maybe we could keep him from starving.
Caspia!
Andreas stopped, tugging on my hand until I faced him.
What the fuck is going on?
I saw him in a tent. Another child took his bread.
Andrea stared down at me, his forehead furrowed.
What do you mean you saw him?
In a vision. The only vision I'd had while awake. A vision of the future. And if I could change that boy's fate, maybe I could change Andreas's too.